And now, it's BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and welcome to today's show. It's an action-packed show today. Just before we get going, I want to let you know that the Gismondi Online newsletter is out this weekend, but you won't receive it unless you're signed up to get it. Don't worry, we don't send you anything. We're too busy to do any of that stuff. All we need is for you to sign up at gismondionline.com, and you'll get access this week to a brand new video from Italy, Matteo Pola. He is the young man, very interesting guy from Fontana Bianca. He talks about Barbaresco and Barolo. It's something you're going to love when you watch that. So try and sign up and get that while you can. Now, Alexis Esseltine, co-owner of Penticton's Tin Whistle Brewing, joins us today. Of course, craft beer is just on fire in Penticton, so we'll have a chat about that. In then Marco Antonio, fourth generation owner of Di Martino Wineries, they make wine the old way, and they make probably one of the best Cabernet Sauvignons I've tasted in 10 years. We're going to talk about their ungrafted Cabernet Sauvignon, so you want to listen to that. Chris Hoffmeister joins us. He's the chief executive officer from Select Wines. We're going to talk about the business of wine, how it gets bought, shipped, and sent around the set around the country, and all the things that happen before you see it on a store shelf. But up next, Chef Ned Bell joins us from BC Turkey, and we're going to talk turkey with tips about buying, preparing, and serving the bird for the big event coming up next week. Of course, the Thanksgiving long weekend. This is BC Food and Wine Radio. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and we are set to go.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Penticton may be known for its wine, but it's also a craft beer paradise. Get to know the Penticton beer scene during the 5th annual Penticton Beer Week and Block Party, happening October 13th through the 22nd. Featuring events at all 8 local breweries, as well as restaurants and other venues all over town, including the always fun Penticton Beer Run. Go to visitpenticton.com for more information on Penticton Beer Week, as well as other upcoming festivals and events in Penticton.
Celebrate the holidays in style at the Watermark Beach Resort in Osoyoos. Join other small businesses on December 15th for a holiday party featuring local entertainment and a festive gourmet buffet. Or host your own private event for your team. And when the celebrations are over, just take the elevator home back to your room with their special holiday party rates. You can find out more by emailing sales@watermarkbeachresort.com or call 250-495-5511.
At Noble Vines, they believe the best brings out the best. That's why they take only the most admired vines to develop their wines, including the 242 Sauvignon Blanc, which originated in Bordeaux, France. These superior vine stocks adapted well to their premier vineyards in Monterey, California, producing a medium-bodied wine with great acidity, zesty aromas of ripe lemon, and flavors of golden peach with lime. Available exclusively through BCL Select at your local BC liquor store. Find out more at noblevines.com.
A ring-a-ding-ding. Time for happy hour at the Modest Butcher at Mount Boucherie Estate Winery. Featuring wine by the glass starting at just $5, along with the most fabulous gourmet bites the West Side has ever seen. Daily from 2 to 5 p.m. Plus, join us for Tommy and Tannen Tuesdays. Order a giant tomahawk ribeye and get your first bottle of Mount Boucherie Reserve Merlot for just $5. The Modest Butcher at Mount Boucherie Estate Winery. See you today.
Take your wine appreciation to the next level and become a rebel. Welcome to the Rebel Club at Liber Estates. As a rebel member, you'll enjoy a regular shipment of exemplary Liber wines for your cellar, along with complimentary tastings and VIP treatment at the winery and more. And with the ease and convenience of online ordering, your wine will be shipped straight to your door. Discover more at liberestates.com. Simply great wines.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to the show. And a shout out to Prince Rupert and all 25 other cities in total listening across the province on the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Our guest today is Chef Ned Bell for BC Turkey. Ned, how are you? It's great to catch up with you.
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me on, Anthony.
Yeah, well, I wanted to get you on a little bit early to talk about Thanksgiving and, in particular, cooking the bird, because it's always an issue somewhere for someone. Of course, many of our listeners are great cooks, but let's talk a bit about turkey. Like, did you learn to cook a turkey at home from your mother or your father, or did you learn as a chef? How did you approach that issue?
Oh gosh, that why do you have to ask me that question? I hope my mother is not listening. She I'll leave it at this. My mom is the reason why I am a chef.
Okay.
And I will not go any further into that statement.
Okay, that's a good answer.
I'm the product of a great home economics teacher in high school, so I absolutely love cooking, of course, and turkey. You know, of course, BC turkey farmers putting delicious food on our tables, you know, here during the holidays, but also realistically all year long. You know, we are challenged to cook large birds for lots of different reasons, most of which is probably just, you know, we just don't know how long. You know, at what temperature, and then probably the most important thing is how do you hold it after it's cooked? Because I'm sure you've been to some of your holiday parties over the years where, you know, you get there at 4 o'clock and the turkey's been out of the oven for a few hours already, somebody had it in the oven at 5 a.m. or, you know, something like that, because we're intimidated because we have, you know, 6 or 7 or 10 or 20 other side dishes that we want to serve. You know, in the middle of the table, and we only have one oven, you know?
Right. Well, let's start with some quick questions and answers. One of the first things is, what about size and number of people? How do you sort that out?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think it depends on, are you cooking for leftovers or not, which, of course, most of us are. You know, I think that you are looking for about 5 ounces of cooked turkey meat per person, realistically.
Right.
Some people eat more than that. Some people eat less. I certainly eat more than that because I you know, love both white and dark meat. And so, you know, you times that by the number of people that you're looking to feed. And, you know, you have to take into account, you know, that the carcass of the turkey after you've carved it represents, let's say, let's say about half of the weight of the turkey. It's not quite that, but, and so you just do a little bit of simple math. And, you know, the truth is, pop into Google and say, hey, I'm feeding, you know, 20 people or 12 people or 6 people. What size bird do I need? I mean, I'm always cooking for leftovers, for multiple days of leftovers. So I always cook a bird that's way too big, sometimes two birds. You know, because I want to make turkey chili or turkey sandwiches or turkey stew or, you know, turkey pot pie or whatever I, you know, my family feels like.
Okay. I don't want to make it too complicated, but are you a brining guy, and should we be brining our turkeys? Like, you hear so much about that, but that didn't happen at my house. When I was growing up, we always had kind of a nice turkey that wasn't brined. So what's that?
Yeah, you don't need to brine your turkey. I love a good brined turkey because it adds tons of flavor to the bird. It helps season it, and it also helps it stay moist. But the truth is, a well-cooked bird will be moist, like a properly cooked bird will be moist. You know, of course, seasoning, you know, you want to put a little, you know, salt and pepper. You know, I think simple is best when it comes to turkey, because you have so many other flavors on the table. And, you know, it's a fairly standard flavor profile, you know, mashed potatoes and cranberry sauce and gravy and, you know, all the other different delicious sides. There's so many things going on your plate that I think seasoning the bird with anything other than salt and pepper might not necessarily be needed. But, you know, a brine is so simple. It's you know, liquid, salt, and sweetness, and that's kind of it. And you soak it for, you know, 12 to 24 hours in a big tub overnight, a big bowl or big what have you, depending on the size of your fridge and the size of the bird.
Yeah.
And
please put it in the fridge.
Please put it in the fridge. Yes. If you can't put it in the fridge, don't bother brining.
Don't do it.
But you know, it's interesting. So I just ordered my first two turkeys of the season from a local butcher, and they're actually thawing them out for me. They will get fresh birds for most of us.
Yeah.
A lot of our local butchers don't have, don't have fresh birds quite yet, and so they have frozen birds. And so I called my local butcher and I said, hey, can you thaw it out for me over the next couple of days? And he was willing to do that, which was pretty
great. And of course in BC we have, I think there's over 60 farmers now that are producing turkeys year round, so there's a good supply of fresh turkeys. You just have to get in there and get it ordered. This is a good time to order it now. Don't go the last day looking for it.
Turkey farming, families putting food on our tables is just, you know, so important to us during the holidays. But truthfully, turkey's available all year long. There's so many delicious things you could do with turkey.
Yeah. Our guest is Ned Bell. We're talking turkey, BC turkey in particular. Let's go back to your first premise. When you take that turkey out of the oven, how long do you have to wait, or should you wait? And like, I know I've been to places people put towels on them and wait for 20 minutes. Like, what do you do when you pull that turkey out?
Yeah, well, I tent it like anybody else, you know, usually tin foil or something, and I keep it in a warm-ish spot, but not on top of the stove, because that's going to be hotter than you want it to be. Usually I have to transfer it to a new roasting pan or a new vessel of some sort, casserole dish or what have you, because I want all the bottom of the deliciousness in that roasting pan to be the base for my gravy. And you know, resting a piece of meat, I say that you want to rest it for as long as you've cooked it. I mean, that's not always the case for larger birds. You don't need to rest it for multiples of hours. But I would say let it rest for a good 45 minutes. You want it to sort of relax a bit, because when it's in the oven, it's sort of shocked and tense, right? And it needs to relax, and all the fibers need to sort of calm down. And then the juices stay in the meat, as opposed to if you cut it too soon, the juices are still sort of running around the meat, and they'll release all over the cutting board, and then you've lost all the juiciness and all the flavor, you know. And I mean, you're looking to, I usually start my turkey at about 325 degrees. For the majority of the cooking. Now that could be 350, no problem. I mean, it really is up to you. And then you want to bring it up to 180 degrees Fahrenheit. That's properly cooked, which is, you know, 82 ish degrees Celsius. Mm-hmm. But I turn it up towards the end of the cooking process just to get it a little more golden brown.
Nice.
It's sort of like a low and slow, you know, because you want to cook it from the inside out. If the oven's too hot, you're going to cook it from the outside in, and that's why we traditionally have really dry breasts.
Yeah.
Because
which we want to avoid.
Which we definitely want to avoid, because we've cooked it too fast. We're sort of we're impatient, right? You have to let the oven do its job. And it's, you know, it's there to do its job. And even if you let it rest for longer than normal, if it's properly cooked and then you have to re-therm it, you know, after you've sliced it, you warm the sliced meat up again, then it's still going to be juicy and awesome, because it's not been overcooked and rushed.
We're talking with Chef Ned Bell for BC Turkey. By the way, lots of recipes at nedbell.com and at www.canadianturkey.ca. One of those recipes is for leftovers. Do you have a favorite, Ned, for the next day?
Well, you know, as you've heard me say, I cook for leftovers. I love leftovers. I cook for leftovers all year long, because why would you not want to cook once and eat twice?
Yeah.
You know, or eat three times, depending on what you're making. And some dishes really lend themselves really well to that. Turkey stew, turkey pot pie, turkey chili, you know, turkey meatloaf, whatever it may be. I mean, why not use turkey instead of some of the other go-to proteins that you use throughout the year? It's a clean, healthy protein. It's super good for you. You know, as you mentioned, the 60 BC turkey farming families that are across our province, you know, raising these incredible birds for our tables. You know, why not use all the different parts of the turkey? legs and drumsticks and breasts and even the carcass for turkey gravy all year long. I mean,
well, they say pound for pound, it's the best value protein in the market.
Yeah, it's quote unquote affordable, and I think that's important in our really challenged affordability issues that we're all facing.
We're almost out of time. So what I need is is it going to be a turkey sandwich? What can you share with us for leftover? What's your favorite?
Well, the recipe I think I shared with you is a turkey sandwich with this incredible Okanagan pear relish and a bunch of other delicious things. You know, pears and apples and cranberries this time of year, fall fruit, fantastic with roasted turkey. And, you know, anything vegetable to garnish, you know, or a great sourdough is going to make a great sandwich, and you can pack it for your lunch or for your kids' lunch.
One last question, stuffing in or stuffing out?
Stuffing out, for sure. Stuffing out. Okay. You can make an incredible stuffing. You roll it in a bit of a log and slice it nice and cylindrical, you know, like a circle, and it's pretty delicious. Or put it in a casserole dish and bake it simply.
Right on. Ned Bell, so great to catch up with you. Thanks for all your tips today on turkey.
Thanks, Tony. Have a great day, and I hope everybody enjoys the holidays with BC Turkey.
Thank you. That was Chef Ned Bell for BC Turkey. You'll find those recipes at nedbell.com and canadianturkey.ca. Still ahead, Chris Hoffmeister, Chief Executive Officer of Select Wines, joins us to talk about the business of wine in Canada. On the radio weekly in 25 cities across British Columbia or on demand on all the major podcast platforms, this is BC Food and Wine Radio.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
Clos du Soleil makes wines that speak of the Similkameen soil where their grapes are grown and the souls of the people who call this valley their home. Winemaker Michael Clark and his team specialize in wines that blend Bordeaux grape varieties with their unique mountainous terroir. The result is wines that are elegant, ageable, and authentic. Clos du Soleil, wild places, soulful wines. Available at closdusoleil.ca and fine restaurants and wine stores near you.
Attention wine connoisseurs. Iron Gate Auctions are bringing you the chance to indulge in some of the most exquisite back vintage wines from Canada's most exclusive private collections. Each bottle sold individually so you can pick and choose to your heart's content. With an average of 3,000 available per auction, there is something for everyone at all price points. And the best part? Inexpensive temperature controlled delivery available right to your door. Visit irongateauctions.com to start bidding now.
Hello, I'm Anthony Gismondi, and this is Destination Langley, BC. Our guest is Erin Credba. She's the Executive Director at Tourism Langley. Erin, Langley is an agriculturally rich area, and as we near the start of fall, what are some of the ways we can celebrate the harvest?
The start of the harvest season brings two items that Langley has become very well known for, cranberries and pumpkins.
I imagine there must be an assortment of farms to visit.
That's right. You can visit locations such as Alder Acres, Krause Berry Farms, Loft Country, or Eagle Acres Dairy to pick the perfect pumpkin. And over at the Bog Riverside Cranberry Farm, you have the opportunity to see and learn about a working cranberry bog, and you can purchase items made from their cranberries.
Do other local businesses incorporate harvest items into their menus or offerings?
Absolutely. Milner Valley Cheese makes a fantastic cranberry shove. I've seen local craft breweries offer cranberry and pumpkin beer, just to name a few.
Langley's well known for its signature harvest celebration. What can you tell us about that?
That's right. The annual Cranberry Festival takes place October 7th in Fort Langley and is an opportunity to shop a large variety of vendors and, of course, purchase fresh cranberries.
It also sounds like the perfect opportunity to forage for Thanksgiving dinner ingredients in one place. Anything else we shouldn't miss in Langley this fall?
Equally popular to the Cranberry Festival, but completely different, is Grave Tales at the Fort Langley National Historic Site.
Okay, I don't think I've heard about that. What can you tell us?
Grave Tales is a tour through Fort Langley Village at night where expert storytellers take you on a 2 or 3 hour walk and share spine-chilling stories, including the history of Fort Langley.
And as always, complete details for the events are on your website.
That's right.
Erin, thanks so much.
Thanks, Anthony. Talk to you next time.
For more information, go to tourism-langley.ca. For Destination Langley, BC, I'm Anthony Gismondi.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
British Columbia, across the province on the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Our guest is Chris Hoffmeister. He's the Chief Executive Officer of Select Wines. We spoke earlier this year on location at the Vancouver International Wine Festival, where, as always, we got an insightful perspective on the current business of importing, distributing, and selling wine across Canada. Here's that conversation. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Anthony.
Let's start with that, Select Wines. Is that what you do? Do you select wines?
We select wines, yeah. Wow. Yeah, I've been doing it for 40 years. We just celebrated our 40th anniversary.
So you're what we used to call a wine agency. Now you're like a distributor. How would you describe what it is that you guys do?
I could sound like Microsoft and call ourselves an enterprise partner.
Okay.
We do sales, promotion. We're going to embark on bottling here soon in Canada as well.
Yeah. You find wines, though, for
we
people,
do.
Right?
Yeah, we scour the planet for great wines.
Yeah, and then you bring them back to Canada, and you somehow work in a very tightly wound system in 12 or 13 countries or provinces, as we call
yeah,
them.
Yeah, we're from lobster to salmon. We are servicing all Canadian customers in all channels. Yeah. So we embrace the rules, Tony.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's start with the environment, because it's a big story in wine. Has it been a big story on your side of the wine business?
Huge story, of course. You know, short harvests in Burgundy, challenges getting supply out of Champagne. We've got, of course, a challenging vintage in 2022.
In BC.
2023 in BC. Yeah. Our response is a little bit different. We're sort of one of the younger leaders in the industry, so... we have become, as of September last year, the first carbon neutral wine company in Canada. So that means we're a carbon neutral wine distributor, the first of our kind.
And that's a big thing, because you distribute a lot of weight, I guess.
We distribute about 2.8 million cases of wine, so 30 million plus bottles.
Yeah.
And we have our own delivery trucks in big parts of the market, so we are... absolutely doing everything we can to reduce our carbon footprint. And we feel it's just an important connection. It was sort of the missing link. You know, our suppliers, our partners, our wineries are all doing sustainability initiatives and all sorts of other carbon capture initiatives.
Yeah.
And I would say some of the customers are very focused on sustainability, lightweight glass, different styles and formats of wines.
Yeah.
And the distributor network in Canada was lost in the middle. And so we've decided to piece it all together and become a carbon-neutral wine company.
And actually, some monopolies are pressing for that as well. I guess
heavily.
Some of the provincial monopolies.
Yeah.
In fact, I was talking to Laura Catena, who thought that maybe Canadian monopolies would change the way wine was sold around the world at some point.
You never know. I mean, I think that in a market like Quebec, we have a huge call-out for lightweight glass. They're not allowing for heavy glass. Struggle with that a little bit. It makes sense, I suppose, under sort of $25, but you know, I would love to see the conversation when someone asked Marchese Piero Antinori to put Tianello into a lightweight bottle. So
so
it's changing everywhere. We're seeing bottled in Canada initiatives as well, which are pretty exciting at this point.
Let's talk about consumers. Like, we've come out of the pandemic. What does a consumer look like, and how are they enjoying the current milieu of wines and retail?
Yeah, I would say that the consumer was very excited to come out of the pandemic up until about September, October.
Yeah.
And then our interest rates went over 5%, and a huge percentage of Canadians, of course, have variable mortgages.
Yep.
And with mortgage rates going over 5%, we saw a very dramatic decrease in sales overall of beverage alcohol, and wine is not immune to that decrease. So for the first time, I think you've been at this a little longer than I have, 35 years, I think, we're seeing a decline in overall in the Canadian wine market.
Wow. That's big.
Well, it's easier, I guess, if you have short harvests from some parts of the world. There's less wine to sell.
Well,
I always need.
Yeah, I mean, I always look at it and I think, well, there's another new winery and they're selling like a $60 wine. What happened to that wine? Like, when we were growing up, of course, wine isn't as cheap as it was, but there was always really well-made wine at $15, $18, $20. It seems to be just disappearing at that level, the level that you might be able to drink it once or twice a week.
It's hard to say. I think in this room, and you know, overall in the industry, there's still an extraordinary value under $25.
Yeah.
You don't have to look far. I mean, look far from your local liquor store to find extraordinary value from Chile. You know, whites from British Columbia under $25 are also punching well above their weight. So there's there are still good options, but I would agree with you that what we used to drink at $20, $22 or $18 is now $50.
Yeah. What about cans? What about bag in the box? What about all that? Is that changing too? I mean, we talked about lighter glass, but what about packaging and all that? That's become big.
Overall, the consumer, I think, is looking for more adaptability and more opportunity to drink wine in more circumstances. So does it make sense to put a glass bottle on your boat?
Yeah.
You know, it might make more sense to keep a nice bag and box wine in the fridge.
Yeah.
And, you know, some good wines coming out in that format. We're really pleased with the way that's going.
We
you know, we with our Poplar Grove partner, they produce for their wine club a bag and box Pinot Gris.
Right.
It's an extraordinary product. Sells out immediately. It's not, you know, inexpensive. It's about $70 a bag and box. But
what, that's 3 liters or?
3 liters, yeah.
Yeah. But it's easy to use, and it hangs around for a while,
100%.
Too.
The can thing is a different ball of wax, because generally people are trying to put 11 or 12% alcohol wines in cans.
Yeah.
What happens with that is, especially if it's cold, you drink too fast.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you're drinking it like a beer or an RTD, and before you know it, you've had 3 cans of wine, and you're three-quarters of a bottle into it, and that becomes a problem.
What do you think is hot at the moment, like at Select? Which countries or which wines? What are people shifting towards or shifting away from?
What are people shifting away from?
Yeah.
I think that while there's still an ongoing great market for white Burgundy, it's been a harder product to find. So we're finding a lot of people very enthusiastic about new varietals from Italy at sort of $25 to $35 price point. So Gavi is very hot for us.
Yeah.
Lugana, very, very hot.
Yeah, white wines.
Yeah, white wines generally.
White Burgundy.
Definitely.
And Spain too, probably, eh?
Like, yeah, Spain
like
as well.
Like Albarino.
Exactly. We work with Telmo Rodriguez. Rueda. It's a good example of one of the houses that's really leading that charge.
Yeah. I was thinking about countries too. Like for me, California, I don't know. I don't know if there's a shift on there, but the wines seem to me to be somewhat stale in some ways.
I think that...
That might be too harsh, but...
I really think it depends where you're looking. I still think that the style of wine is becoming a little bit more restrained and a little bit more character-driven.
Mm-hmm.
From California, I think that particularly Monterey and Sonoma Coast are showing really big advancement in sort of palate feel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty excited about those appellations. And I think BC is continuing to show extraordinary evolution.
Yeah, yeah. Small amount of wine. I mean, it's not going to affect too much in the world, but they have really shot ahead and done some great stuff already.
I mean, you've got great wineries from the Vancouver Island. You've got great wineries, of course, from Naramata and other places. Wines are showing great from British Columbia.
I'm speaking with Chris Hofmeister. He's the CEO of Vancouver-based Select Wines. It's an ever-changing business, though. I think that's probably the best thing we can say. And in your job, I guess you're looking ahead mostly most of the time.
Yeah, I think I would say the last 2 years I've learned more about our business than I ever have in my life because of the challenges with freight and challenges with inflation and these other things. But we are looking at additional trends. We're selling a lot of low and no alcohol wines at this moment.
Yeah, that seems... Well, I think it's good, you know. I mean, it's just another sector of the market, really.
Yeah, I think that it just makes wine a bit more sessionable. And, you know, if you are concerned about health for any reason, which, you know, many people are, of course, you know, maybe switching over to something that's got a lower alcohol profile isn't a bad thing.
Yeah, actually, I love people that are pursuing low alcohol or no alcohol wines to get the quality up of those wines, to find a way... find a way to do it.
Yeah, we're on our second vintage of a low-alcohol wine at Poplar Grove.
Yeah.
And we're really pleased with the results we're getting on that program.
So it's changed again.
In terms of
they're moving ahead every year.
Because certain grape varietals lend themselves better to low alcohol.
Yeah.
And then we're using a very gentle method of low alcohol, which is an expensive process. But we want to produce, it's Poplar Grove after all, so we need to produce something
brand,
that's very, very top end.
Chris, always great to catch up with you.
Thank
a lot of challenges
Anthony.
In the business, but it seems like you overcome most of them. You're still here.
I've got an answer.
Yeah, you got an answer. Well, keep going. We love to hear that you're carbon neutral at Select Wines. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Chris Hoffmeister is the CEO of Select Wines, and we're talking about we've been talking about selling wine at retail across Canada. We're going to take a quick break. More to come on this BC Food and Wine Radio Network. I'm Anthony Gismani. We'll be right back.
More still to come from our Iron Gate Auction stage here at the Vancouver International Wine Festival. Find your most coveted wines at irongate.wine.
Penticton, the hub of the South Okanagan. A perfect place for a BC road trip this fall. Enjoy outdoor adventures and reward yourself after a day of activities with a visit to one of over 80 area wineries, cideries, and distilleries, or 8 craft breweries. Experience fantastic locally sourced restaurants, too. It's the perfect destination for a fall getaway with gorgeous changing colors and menus. Before you go, make sure to check the website for information on wine tours, winery events, and help planning your trip. Go to visitpenticton.com.
One of the best things about drinking wine today is that inexpensive wine has never been better. Helping you to improve your wine knowledge and find great buys in the marketplace has been a lifelong goal of mine because once you become a savvy shopper, you can influence retailers to start selling better wines at better prices. So learning just a little bit more about wine can improve the local selection in your neighborhood. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and I invite you to visit us at gismondionwine.com to become a savvy shopper and drink better wine.
It's time to think turkey. Your BC turkey farmers work hard all year to bring high-quality products to your table. Whether it's a weeknight dinner or special occasion, turkey is always a delicious source of lean protein, and you can't forget the leftovers. With a great meat-to-bone ratio, you get a great value and multiple meals. So the next time you're wondering what to serve, think turkey. Find recipes, info, and more at bc.canadianturkey.ca.
At Noble Vines, they believe the best brings out the best. That's why they take only the most admired vines to develop their wines, including the 242 Sauvignon Blanc, which originated in Bordeaux, France. These superior vine stocks adapted well to their premier vineyards in Monterey, California, producing a medium-bodied wine with great acidity, zesty aromas of ripe lemon, and flavors of golden peach with lime. Available exclusively through BCL Select at your local BC liquor store. Find out more at noblevines.com.
Discover award-winning wines in the stunning Okanagan Valley at Tinhorn Creek Winery, the ultimate destination for wine lovers. Enjoy relaxed tasting experiences featuring premium wines sourced from the Golden Mile, or embark on a one-of-a-kind sensory adventure with a black glass blind tasting. And for delicious Mediterranean-inspired cuisine made with locally sourced ingredients, Mirador Restaurant is waiting. Good food, great wine, unforgettable memories. Tinhorn Creek Winery. Visit tinhorn.com.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
My bad habits lead to white eyes staring at space, and I know I lose control of the things that I say.
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to the show, and a shout-out to Kamloops and all 25 other cities listening across the province on the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Our guest today is Marco Antonio DiMartino. He's a fourth-generation owner of the DiMartino Winery in Chile. Marco, how are you today?
Fine. Very, very good, Anthony. Pleasure to be here with you.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. DiMartino has a long history. Why don't we start there with the winery? Where are you? When did you get started? And where are you today, sort of thing?
Sure. We're based in the Maipo Valley, which is an hour away from Santiago in central Chile. Santiago is the capital city, the main city of our country. And we're an hour away from there in Maipo, which is one of the most renowned wine-producing regions in Chile. Our winery was founded almost 90 years ago. We're turning 90 next year. In 1934, by my Italian family, actually, that came before the war, and then another part of the family after the war, and they started the winery here. The winemaking was their daily job back in Italy, so sure. it made a logical choice to start making wines again, but in Chile. So for the first years, it was mostly making wine in bulk for the first 30, 40 years. then start bottling wines, and then start selling the wines as our own brand, and then starting to export the wines to other markets as the Chilean economy opened up. So it's pretty much the same story that you will heard in some other regions, especially in Italy or in France, of people making wine for everyday consumption and then progressing into bottling their own wines, discovering the potential of their terroirs and trying to highlight those potentials in a wine and in a domain as the French call
You're the fourth generation. I know that things have changed a lot in Chile. You know, maybe people in North America don't know it as well, but let's talk about the sort of seminal change that happened at DiMartino. You were making wines, exporting them to London, making a style, a style that Robert Parker was enamored with at the time and many of the buyers. But things have changed. Tell us a little bit about what the thinking and what's going on at DiMartino.
Yeah, I mean, we were making wine in this pretty much like international style, very much influenced by Michel Roland in a way, which was, Michel Roland was very famous in Chile back in those days. I'm talking about the early 2000s, basically. So we started to make wines in that style, with a lot of ripeness, higher alcohols, a lot of new French oak in there as well. Wines that were very impressive, but at the same time, we end up realizing that those wines, had, besides being, I mean, very good with no, I mean, technically, they were lacking a little bit in identity in terms of showing really where they came from. And,
no soul. They had no soul.
Yeah. Exactly. Their soul, in a way, they were good ones, but they were not talking about where they came from, their origins, or Maipo in a way, and the other regions we work with. So we decided, almost going to be 15 years now, that we make an important change. Right about the time in which my brother and I were going back to the winery and trying to managing the winery. So we make a family decision in terms of moving away from that style, that more international style, and trying to highlight what we think are the most important characteristics of our terroir, and that involved a lot of study in viticulture and moving away from overripeness, moving away from new oak, looking for freshness, moderate alcohols, and using oak but neutral oak, and so on.
It's a sense of place.
I mean, I think the wines we're making now are much more similar to the wines that my grandparents were making than the wines that my father was making, actually.
Yeah. That's interesting. Hey, our guest is Marco Antonio DiMartino. He's a fourth generation owner of the DiMartino Winery in Chile. I've got three wines in front of me that sort of represent where you're going. They're also in the market here in Vancouver. So I wonder if we could just quickly say a few things. I want to start with the Maipo Ungrafted Gravel Soils Cabernet Sauvignon. It's a fantastic label and name. What's the story of this wine?
I mean, we wanted to show a little bit of Maipo, Isla Maipo in particular, which is the place within the Maipo Valley in which we're based. And with a Cabernet that's very traditional Cabernet from Maipo style, medium body, fresh acidity, nice silky tannins. The name Ungrafted comes really because the material, the vines, the selection of the vines come from very old selections that came from France, from Bordeaux, specific before Phylloxera. So it's a very old genetic material in a way.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the secrets of Maipo besides the gravel soils as well. So we wanted to highlight that. And besides that, we don't have any phylloxera in Chile. So the vines are planted in their own roots, which is something quite unique in the wine world, right?
Yeah. I would say very unique, and for people who've never had ungrafted vines, this is a great wine to understand the intensity of flavors that you can get from having the natural rootstock of the vine going right into the earth. Hey, let's talk a bit about Carmenere. You guys are pretty famous for Carmenere as well. The Alto de Pietras, is that the high stones or the high mountains? How would you describe that?
Yeah, Alto de Piedras, it's like a small stone hill, really.
Okay.
Translates to a stone hill in English. It's a section of our vineyard in which we have deep gravel soils, and it's where we planted our first Carmenere vineyard. But when we planted the Carmenere vineyard, we were actually looking to plant for a Merlot vineyard back in 1992. And then in 1994, what we thought was Merlot was discovered that was actually Carmenere, another variety from Bordeaux as well, but totally different from Merlot. So we did some analysis and came up to, and realized that what we had and what we thought we had planted as Merlot was actually close to 85% Carmenere, and the rest was a little bit of Cabernet Franc. So no Merlot at all in the vineyard. But again, we made the wine. It impressed, and it was something new. It impressed a little bit some clients we had, and so we decided to label it as Carmenere with the 1996 vintage back in 1997. So it's been a while now. It was a big thing back in those days because Merlot was obviously most widely known and commercially more viable than Carmenere. But we decided to raise the flag of the Carmenere.
Marco, it's a very delicious wine and a very, I don't even want to say varietally correct. It's a very Chilean wine. And I think that, you know, if that was your purpose and is your purpose today, you're really achieving it through these two wines. They tell great stories.
Thank you.
I need to move on to the final wine. I had a chance to go to Itata with Pedro Pera many years ago when the region was just opening up again to wine. Tell us about this special place and this wine, Las Ovidatas.
Yeah, this is actually what we think is the origins, the real origins of Chilean wines are in the Itata Valley. The Itata Valley is the oldest winemaking region in Chile. This is where the Spaniards first settled and started producing wine almost 500 years ago. It's a region that's close to the Pacific. We're talking about 20 kilometers more or less from our vineyard to the Pacific, so it gets a little bit of that ocean, cool climate, ocean influence. The soils are decomposed granite, very old soils. So in terms of climate and soils, the terroir is quite interesting. And then we have really old vines. In this case, Las Olvidadas is País, which is also called Mission grape, for instance, in California. And it was the main grape variety that the Spaniards brought to the Americas at the beginning. So it was a very hardy variety in terms of it can withstand drought, extreme weather conditions, and always yield a decent crop. So that's why it was mostly used by priests and the name Mission and so on. So we decided to make a País from a vineyard that's older than it's almost we believe that it's more than 200 years old, but we don't have any documents to prove that. We know it's more than 150, but it's a really old vineyard, dry farm. It's a really original and true expression of País and this very unique and rustic area, Itata.
Yeah, this is a fascinating wine, of course, a historical wine, and yet it's a wine for the young generation today to drink, to actually really connect with the history of Chile, the history of the planting of vines there, and of course, to talk about vines that survive 200 years are smarter than most human beings, I would say, at this point, when we look around the world. So I love to try wines from there. It's fantastic. They're in the market. All of these wines are in Vancouver, in the market, in specialty wine stores. And it's just exciting to see these new wines. You feel good about the direction of Chile today and where it's headed on the world wine market?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there's always going to be a place for everybody. I mean, the big wineries, which are a little bit more commercial in their approach. But I think that there's a new generation of winemakers that are going back to the roots, rediscovering, old stuff, like old vineyards of Pais or the old clonal material from the old selections, really, from Maipo, and really looking into our heritage and what makes Chile and really unique. I think that, that would be like the real concept. I mean, going back and trying to understand what makes us different, what is the essence of the wine that we're making here, the real personality, and embracing that, not trying to mimic something else that's been done in another place,
sure,
in another region of the world, but trying to really highlight our personality and show the best of it, and making wines that are honest and are really transmitting the terroirs we have and the conditions we have. I think the younger generation is understanding that and is pushing a lot into that direction.
Marco, a real pleasure to talk to you today, and a great pleasure to try these three wines, all of them available here in Vancouver. I hope that we'll see you sometime soon in Vancouver, or maybe I'll catch up with you down in Chile.
I hope that I have the chance to visit you over there. So thank you. It's been great to have this conversation with you and showing a little bit of our wines.
Thanks so much. Our guest is Marco Antonio Di Martino. He's the fourth generation owner of Di Martino Winery. Hey, we're available weekly on our podcast and across British Columbia on the radio. I'm Anthony Gismondi.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
Plan your family road trip this fall to Penticton. Stop in for a visit to one of the local wineries. Be sure to mark your calendar for October 21st and 22nd, Penticon, Penticton's annual pulp culture festival. It's two full days dedicated to pulp culture on every level. Whatever your genre or hobby, there's a place for you there. Before you go, make sure to check the website for family vacation packages, family-friendly activities and attractions, and more upcoming events. Go to visitpenticton.com.
At Noble Vines, they believe the best brings out the best. That's why they take only the most admired vines to develop their wines, including the 242 Sauvignon Blanc, which originated in Bordeaux, France. These superior vine stocks adapted well to their premier vineyards in Monterey, California, producing a medium-bodied wine with bright acidity, zesty aromas of ripe lemon, and flavors of golden peach with lime. Available exclusively through BCL Select at your local BC liquor store. Find out more at noblevines.com.
Hello, I'm Anthony Gismondi with 2 Minutes in Cowichan. Our guest is Kenzie Knight from Tourism Cowichan. Like other areas of BC, farms and the culinary scene are the places to be of late. And Kenzie, the Cowichan seems to have a lot to offer when it comes to that.
For sure. The Duncan Farmers Market is a must-see. It's one of BC's oldest and largest farmers markets. The market happens year-round, so every Saturday you can head downtown to shop from the local farmers, growers, makers, and artisans.
Well, we love a good farmers market, and actually I've been to the Duncan Market and it is quite a scene. You will want to check it out. Tell us more about some of the agricultural scene in the region.
Cowichan's home to over 700 working farms. Quite amazing. Because of the warm climate and fertile soil, Cowichan has been growing and producing artisanal food and drink for decades. It's also Vancouver Island's official wine region and home to 14 wineries.
And I think it's why the Cowichan has such a growing and celebrated food scene.
Yes, the food scene in Cowichan is incredible. From cozy bakeries to fine dining, there's something for everyone. Many of the local restaurants use food that was grown or produced right in the region, so it's a welcome return to simplicity where the slow food movement is celebrated.
So close to Victoria and Vancouver, it's a breath of fresh air to get away from the big city and unwind in the stunning Cowichan countryside.
Yes, on any drive, you'll find numerous farm stands on the side of the road filled with fresh seasonal fruits and vegetables, eggs, meat, milk, and cheese, all made right here in the region. I'd also recommend renting e-bikes to explore the countryside, and you can stop at local farms and wineries along the way.
Farms and farmers markets, wineries, all close to our heart here at the BC Food and Wine Radio. We highly encourage you to discover something new on the farm in the Cowichan. Kenzie, thanks so much.
You're most welcome, Anthony. We look forward to seeing you at the Duncan Farmers Market. Don't forget there is live music.
Okay, it's a deal. I'm going to make my plan, and you can make your plans at tourismcowichan.com. Till next time, I'm Anthony Gismondi.
This is BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, Hello, British Columbia. We're back with a special shout out to Nelson and all 25 cities across the province as we are now into the fall harvest season. We remember back to a sunny hot patio interview we had with Alexis Esseltine. She's the co-owner of Tin Whistle Brewing. And believe me, there's a lot going on with craft beer in Penticton. Here's that conversation. Alexis, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. We hardly ever talk about beer.
Today is the day.
You're going to slay everybody now.
We'll bring you to the other side.
Yeah, right. To the light side.
To maybe. The light side.
Yeah, love exactly. it. Well, let's start with Tin Whistle. How about a little history of you and Penticton and how it's all come together?
Yeah, of course. Tin Whistle is actually the original craft brewery of the South Okanagan. Mm-hmm. So we've been brewing beer since 1995.
Okay.
So we are kind of one of the originals in that world, and we are still brewing beer today. We are now the first carbon neutral brewery in BC. So we are trying to make incredible beer and be very thoughtful about it.
Wow.
And we have a list of, you know, 10 to 12 beers that we make and rotate in seasonals. And we have some cores like our peach cream ale,
yeah.
Which we've made for almost 20 years. And so that's a little bit about us, Anthony.
Yeah. Carbon neutral. That's very interesting.
Yeah. My husband and I took over Tin Whistle 3 years ago. We are the third owners.
Right.
And I come from the environmental world. That was my background. And we thought it was really important to come to the table, not only to make incredible beer and to continue to make incredible beer, but to also do it very thoughtfully in a world that's changing.
Yeah.
And so we came to the table with some values and really thoughtful kind of production methods.
Oh, I love that.
With the hopes of, you know, kind of doing some really important stuff in the world.
And just quickly, what would be one of the things that you've done to get down to carbon neutral?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've measured our whole entire impact. So we know wastewater, energy. Some of the cool things we're doing, we're actually working with Okanagan College on an algae project. Mm-hmm. So algae as in the green algae you see in ponds.
Yep.
Algae goes through photosynthesis like a tree does. And so when we ferment beer, we release carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. And we're using these big giant totes of algae to off-gas this fermentation CO2. Yep. And to convert it with the use of algae into oxygen.
Yeah.
So some of the interesting stuff we're doing just to be a bit more thoughtful and also to push our industry and to kind of challenge a little bit the status quo.
I know what you're talking about because they did that at the Torres Winery in Spain about 15 years ago because they have a whole big long project. And I was learning about algae there and I thought, this is really weird. But
it's wild, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
So great. Well, you know, anything we can do to save the earth is a good thing.
It's not a bad thing.
And your customers probably appreciate it, too.
They do. And we distribute beer BC-wide, so we see a lot of traction, especially in the lower mainland around some of those pieces. And the Okanagan's coming too. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you have to make great beer. So the beer is great, but the values are starting to come to the table, too.
We better talk about the beer.
Let's talk about
it. Or we'll get shot. Okay, so we have cracked open.
Yes, we have.
We have the peach cream ale. Which has been around.
It's one of our icons.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's available across the province. It's about to head into Alberta as well. It's a cream ale, and it doesn't actually contain dairy. A cream ale contains oats, which make it very smooth.
Yeah.
So it's barley, oats, wheat, and we use real peaches, and so you get that real taste of the Okanagan, which is important. We always want to make beers.
When do you get the peaches, or how does that work? Or are they, you have them all year round?
Yeah, it's a bit of a proprietary process, so we don't share a lot about our peaching, but it is what makes this beer so unique and so special, and really, you know, sets the tone for a good Okanagan beer.
It's quite a nice, it has a lovely fruity tone, but it's not sweet.
Not sweet.
That's what I like about it.
Still, absolutely.
The bitterness comes through, like the beer style comes through, Yeah, it's quite nice.
Yeah.
I might get converted.
Look.
Hold on, folks.
Hold
don't
on.
Go crazy.
The wine, beer, and radio.
Yeah.
Yeah, not yet.
Yeah. What is it about beer? It's having a moment now with people. Like, it's really coming on. Is it because of the little producers, the people that are really trying to do something interesting?
Yeah, I think so in part. I mean, there's a lot of really interesting stories behind all of these beers, you know, Tin Whistle's history and the place in the region. But there's also a really interesting culinary component to these beers as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're made the same as wine is, you know, with grains that are coming from Canada, oats and barley and local fruit and local, you know, all these these local components and they're brewed locally. So there's a really interesting, beer isn't what it used to be. It's not the Molson Canadian kind of the world anymore. It's just a really interesting medium, you know, and an interesting way to engage.
So like your barley or hops or whatever, where are they coming from?
Yeah, so 95% of our grain is Canadian. So BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, all malted in Alberta, and it comes into us in the Okanagan. Mm-hmm. But we're really, a lot of the kind of the hops are coming from Yakima Valley, which is just over the Washington border.
Yep.
And then some of the things like the peach and the cucumbers, you know, the cucumbers in this next beer we may try are BC greenhouse grown. You know, so we're really working hard to understand the ingredients that are going in because we know that impacts the product coming out.
Okay, so what about visiting? What can people do? And do they just drink beer? Do you have food? How does it all work?
Absolutely. So we're located in the historic Cannery Trade Center. It's actually one of the original fruit canneries of the region. So we've converted it from this industrial space into this brewery and this really interesting industrial space where we serve beer. You know, we have 10 or 12 different beers on tap, along with a number of experimental beers, which we're using different ingredients, different styles, and trying to really push the boundaries of what beer can be. And so when you come on site into our tasting room, you can try those experimentals. It's the only place they're available. We also have a wood-fired pizza truck on site. He's making VPN-certified pizzas on our patio, and so you can have this wildly innovative combination of pizza and beer on our patio and in our tasting room this summer.
It must be a big hit with
visitors.
Big
hit. Yeah, and it's a great way to come and really explore beer.
Yeah. Alexis Esseltine, she's the co-owner in Tin Whistle Brewing. Her craft brewery's in Penticton along with about a dozen others, I think, now. Huh?
Yeah, we have eight. We'll have eight this summer. Eight.
Okay.
Yeah, we're the craft beer capital of Canada.
And then now there's a beer festival as well in the fall, or is it the fall? Yeah,
yes,
I think so.
October.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's really taking off.
It's really taking off. And we work together actually as a brewing community to build Penticton as a beer destination. And if you're ready for it, the beer run is the start of that beer week festival in October. So you run to all of the breweries.
Wow.
Have some samples along the way. So watch out for the Penticton beer run.
You've mistaken me for a young Anthony Gismondi. The beer run. Is there any sort of synergy between you and the wineries? I think obviously, you know, you need good beer to make great wine. That's a given.
Yes.
But I don't know. Is there some cooperation now?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually have two experimental beers on our tap list right now that are used making the leftover skins from the grape harvest.
Fantastic.
From the Joie, actually. Yeah. And so we have a Paquette beer on tap right now where we brewed a Paquette and then blended it with a lager to make what we're calling a Brewquette.
Oh, wow.
We also have a Gewürztraminer table beer on our experimental list that's 4%, so not very heavy, but really light and crisp. And the grape skin really, you know, those flavors and that... those aromas start to come through. So we're doing a lot to try to work locally and to try to really elevate both.
You are on it. Can you come and join the wine business?
See, we should.
We could use that energy. Okay, finally, when are you open? How can people get there? What's the best way to get your stuff?
Absolutely. We are open 7 days a week after May 24th weekend. So come on down Monday to Sunday. Our website features the hours 11:30 till 7, 8, or 9, depending on the day.
Yep.
And the pizza truck will be on site as well. So just reference our website or our social media presence, and you'll have all the updated hours
and
for Tin Whistle.
Can we find your beer anywhere else, or is it...
You absolutely can. A lot of our beers are obviously Okanagan-wide, but we are also shipping into the rest of BC for our peach cream ale specifically.
Okay.
It's listed in the BC government liquor stores. So head to your local BC government liquor store and ask for peach cream ale from Tin Whistle.
There you go.
It'll be there shortly.
So great to meet you.
Great to meet you, Anthony.
Our guest was Alexis Esseltine, co-owner of Tin Whistle Brewing. That's it for this week's show. Special thanks to our technical producer in Vancouver, Dwayne Bishop, assignment editor, Sherry Caleb, and director of operations, Stu Ferguson. For all of us at the show, I'm Anthony Gismondi, wishing you a great week ahead and an even better glass of wine.
That's it for today's show. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.